have your notes, let's turn to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, we'll be looking at a couple passages here as we look at our last two things to touch on as we kind of wrap up our stewardship series. We looked at stay focused last week. We look at safety fences. It's always good to have fences around your property, especially if you have little ones or four-footed critters that aren't feline. They have a mind of their own and they'll go anywhere they want. But for those of us that are dog lovers, it's always good to have a fence around the yard so the dogs can stay in the yard and not go roaming through the countryside. But it's good to have fences in our lives as well, and as believers, as we consider our stewardship. And so we close out with this one, our safety fences. First of all, as we see in Luke chapter 12, we'll look at verses 16 through 20, fear God. As we look at things that we need to put up around us, if you will, for protection. As we look at, we have a parable here, verses 16 through 21 of Luke 12. Christ speaks and he says, and he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said this, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Now as we look at that and fearing God, do we have a God-fearing man in this parable? We don't. We have a man that isn't even considering God, is he? I mean, his mindset is, hey, you know, my business has been very beneficial to me, been very helpful, and I need more room. So let's go out and do these things because, hey, eat, drink, and be merry. And just take care of this and reminding that God comes to him, thou fool, you haven't prepared ultimately for what you need. And that is eternal life. But as we see this, in fearing God, there is no fear of God in him. So yes, fearing God is essential when we stop to consider ourselves and living for him. And again, that fearing God in both aspects, when we think of fear, we think of being afraid of something, something startling us, something that is more than we can handle. So yes, there is that to God, even for the believer. Should we fear God in that way? We should. Because he is quite capable of being rather harsh in his chastening us as his children and seeking to get us back in the right way. And as we see in the book of Acts, Ananias and Sapphira, they didn't fare too well because there was no fear of God in their conniving with their means, and God took them home rather quickly. So yes, there should be that fear of God because of what could happen if we do not walk with him as we should. But then there should also be, and more importantly and more fully, that fear of God, that of who he is. That yes, he is our God. He is an awe-inspiring God. And as we see in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10, he says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. As we acknowledge who he is and the proper place that we have in relationship to him, yes, we start to have that fear of God, realize he's the one in charge, not me. And we keep that hierarchy proper, then we can start to see wisdom. And the knowledge of the holy is understanding, as we finish that verse. We can find ourselves living for Him as we ought, because we're keeping that proper perspective. I mean, it's a joy to be a believer, yes. And it becomes even more joyous when we are living in the light of His Word, following what He's called us to do, walking in obedience to what He has told us in the Scriptures. And ultimately, yes, there is that fear of Him, but again, in a good way. I mean, yes, I fear Him. He could take my life if I step out of line. Because I have no guarantee that as I seek His forgiveness, that He's not going to take me home, because it's like, okay, enough's enough with you, fella. Again, we see that with Ananias and Sapphira. So too often we do, though, neglect to even consider God like this man does. And I trust we've learned not to do that as we've looked through our whole stewardship series, to realize He's the one that calls our shots. He's the one directing our lives. We're not in charge of it, because ultimately, can we be in charge of our lives? We can't, because we have no idea what tomorrow holds. We saw that in James as we were working through James on Sunday school, you know, I want to go to this town and do this or that and gain and everything. And he reminds us, no, if the Lord wills, sure, that may be the process. But, you know, we don't know what tomorrow holds. But who does know what tomorrow holds? Our God does. Can we trust Him? We sure can. And ultimately, that's what it's driving us to, is to fear Him, to realize we are to have a right respect for Him, as we see in our safeguard for God's. For God safeguards our stewardship. He's the one that is directing us. We may not understand the where's and the why's in going forward, but if we are following in the light of His Word, knowing that we're walking in the fear of the Lord, in His will, then it will become clearer as we go. And we find, at least I say we find, I trust you have, but I have found, my life is much more fulfilling when I let Him make the decisions. And as those are made plain to me, I say yes, and I take those steps that He wants me to take and go forward. Life is so much better when He's doing it than me trying to figure it out. And so we have that. So fear God, point B, be content, turn. You may turn a page or so, verses 18 and 19. Be content. Was our man in our parable content with what he had? Yeah, he was not. I need more. I need more. I need more. Where's God in the mix of this? What is God saying about all of this? You know, as too oftentimes we don't bring Him into the mix of things as we seek to live for Him. He is sometimes our last resort instead of our first resort. But as we note in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 and 8, as Paul is speaking to Timothy, he says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." Not just gain, but great gain. "For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content." And so we do need to be content. This man was not. Now, again, there's nothing wrong if God has indeed blessed us and we need to expand. It's going with the understanding that God's in the control of the expansion. I'm doing this as God has led me. We see these things going on. I need to expand. So that the cause of Christ can continue and move forward. But having that contentment with whatever He has given to us. Because he notes, he says, having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. Because as it reminds us, we brought nothing into this world. We speak of, you know, being born with a silver spoon, but they weren't born with a silver spoon. They were born into a wealthy family, but they brought nothing into this world. They may inherit it from their family, but they brought nothing into this world. And it's certain when we go out, we're not taking it with us, anything that we've gathered. It will be left behind. And so we need to be content with what God has given to us and accepting of what he has done. Point two, he says, the man in the parable was not content with what he had. He needed more. And again, the writer of Hebrews will note in chapter 13, verse 5, let your conversation, your manner of living, be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Too often we get wrapped up with our things and think that they bring us security, they bring us contentment. And instead, we get ourselves wrapped up in those things that don't bring us that true contentment because now we're concerned. Somebody may take them. I need a better security system on my house. I need a bigger firearm. I need this and that to protect these things. And all of a sudden, that false sense of contentment because you got that item starts to go out the window. And we have forgot, well, what about God? Can he take care of you and your things? Yes, he can. He will never leave us nor forsake us. But self too often consumes. Philippians chapter 3, verse 19. Paul talks and notes, he says, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly or their desires, whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. Again, there's nothing wrong with having earthly things, but too oftentimes those things consume us, and our focus is not on God. It's not on our stewardship of what he has given to us. And said, how can I use this for God? What does God want me to do with these things that will promote him, glorify him, and help in his cause to spread the gospel, to see others come to Christ? So we need to be content where we're at with what we have. Doesn't mean that God may not give us more. He may well indeed do so. But always with the understanding we're stewards of it. It's ultimately it's his, not ours, whatever it is. C, trust God. Let's continue to look at this passage. We find this man not trusting God at all. And when he was called upon, he was not ready. Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Now what's going to happen to all those things that you have? They're going to go to somebody else. But we are to trust God. This rich man trusted in himself and his riches. But yes, this leads us to worry. Because we don't know. Is somebody going to come through and steal it? I've got all my monetary means in the stock market. Is it going to keep rising? Or is it going to drop off precipitously and that wealth that I had all of a sudden just, poof, it's gone. It just melted away. And we've lost our focus on where we should be trusting. Again, doesn't mean that we don't plan for the future. I'm not saying we shouldn't, you know, put into the stock market, plan for our futures. We should. But ultimately, our trust is in God, not in the stock market, not in the things that we have. God will take care of us. Because as we do those things, that does lead to worry. And as we've seen in our history with the Great Depression back in 1929, people jumping out of windows, killing themselves because they had lost everything as the stock market crashed. Their whole livelihood just disappeared, and they lost all hope. Or so they thought, because their hope was in their riches, not in the God who gave the riches. And so may we trust the God who gives the things that he has given to us, that we are stewards of, ultimately understanding they're his, not mine. And so I need to use them for his glory. The believer, point three, is to have victory over the worry, as we see in Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Love those two verses, and even verse 8 that goes on with a different thought. But he says, be careful for nothing. Be anxious for nothing. We would put it in the vernacular of today, don't worry. Or stop worrying. Because we do worry. But he tells us, be careful for nothing. So instead of worrying, he gives the flip side. Instead of doing that, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. Instead of worrying about those things, and we, as we've touched on this verse before, and we'll say it again, we typically worry about the things we have absolutely no control over. Because the things that we do have control over, we would say, why is there a reason to worry? I can change that. And so there's no worry about it. Well, we worry about the things that we can't do anything about. But we have a God that can do things about that. He's the one that has allowed it to come into our lives. And he will take care of it. And so he reminds us, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. Take it to God in prayer. Don't worry, pray. And we don't have verse 7 there, but we do have the promise that as we do that, we will have the peace of God surround us and give us that which people don't understand. The peace of God which passeth all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds. He will surround us. He will garrison us, as we've noted in that verse, that word keep. God takes care of us. We're his children. And so we have that to trust him. And as we do pray and as we release that worry and put it aside and take it to God first, not last resort, but first resort, then we find that peace comes. And we find that we're far better off praying about these things and having his peace than worrying about it, fretting about it, creating ulcers, creating other problems, physically speaking, because we're all racked with wondering what's going to happen in these things instead of giving it to God. He'll take care of it. He takes care of us. These attitudes overcome worry in the life of the believer. And truly they do. Humility. Admitting everything belongs to God. We're not as big as we think we are. We are truly just lowly sheep whom God has taken care of. To have the contentment, whatever lot in life we have. And we see that as you read in Luke chapter 3, verse 14, I believe. This is people talking to John the Baptist about certain things. And the soldiers likewise demanded of him, saying, "And what shall we do?" And he said unto them, Do violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely, and be content with your wages. As they were wondering about, well, what about us? Well, here, follow these things. Paul will say this to the Philippians in chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. "Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." So at any spot I'm in, God's there. God's taking care of me. So whether I am abounding, I've got his bounty, great. I may be a little harder pressed now, fine. I'm in God's hands. His purpose and plan is unfolding in my life, and I can trust him and follow him. And truly, we see that with the Apostle Paul. Satisfaction, see, with God's care. I mean, are we satisfied with how God cares for us? A good question to ask ourselves often, maybe even sometimes many times in a day. Are we satisfied with God's care? If not, where's the problem? Is it with God? No. So as some of you have done, yeah. If there's a problem, it's on my side, not God's side, okay? Well, if it's on my side, I need to take care of it. If it's pride, if it's whatever it is, I need to confess it to God. God, forgive me. I need to be content, satisfied with your care. Timothy again. He says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. And so we are to be satisfied with what he has given to us. Determination to persevere in our efforts to progress. Galatians chapter 6, verse 9 says, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. We can persevere. We can continue plodding on in the path that God's given to us, knowing that, you know, ultimately there is the final reward coming when we stand in his presence. I mean, our walk, our living for Christ should be that long view of one day being with him in his presence in heaven. And anything that we have of value, we have stored there. Our treasure is there, where moth doesn't corrupt, thieves don't break through and steal, it doesn't rust out, it doesn't wear out, and God's taking care of it, and we are thankful for that. Let's turn to Luke chapter 12, verses 35 through 40. As we come to that last one, be watchful. We are to fear God, we're to be content, we're to trust God, we are to be watchful. Notice what Christ speaks of in verses 35 through 40. It says, let your loins be girded about and your lights burning. Girded about would be referring to the men, particularly in Jesus' day, they would have a long robe with a girdle or a belt. And if they were wanting to move about more freely, they would take the ends of that gown, tunic or whatever, and pull it up and put it into the girdle, the belt, so that you had a little easier ease of movement with their legs. And it was preparing them to do whatever they needed to do. And so he's giving us this idea, having our loins girt about and your lights burning, having the lights on, ready to go. It says, verse 36, and ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord, when he will return from the wedding, that when he cometh and knocketh, they may open unto him immediately. And ye yourselves likewise unto men, let your loins be girded, let your lights be burning, be like those that are ready for when their Lord comes back. Be ready to open the door when he comes knocking. It says, blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you, that he shall gird himself and make them sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them. And if he shall come in the second watch or come in the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. And this know, that if the goodman of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not suffered his house to be broken through. Be ye therefore ready also, for the Son of Man cometh at an hour when ye know not. We are to be watchful in our day. We don't know when God's going to take us home. We don't know when, if we are that generation that will hear the shout and the trumpet and be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. The corruptible will put on incorruption, will be given a new body, and will meet Christ in the air. So are we watchful and being watchful, ready for that? Doing what God's called us to do, to occupy till he comes, but realize that he may call on us at any moment, like this illustration is. We are to be faithful doing what God's called us to be, and that is ultimately stewards. We see in Revelation chapter 22, verse 20, get a little foretaste of our ending of our Revelation study on Sunday evening. It says, he which testifieth these things saith, surely I come quickly. That is Christ. He's the one that has testified to John all that we have in the book of Revelation. And so we have at the close of that book, he says, surely I come quickly. Christ is coming. It may be sooner than we think. And so, amen. And then John chimes in with this understanding, even so, come, Lord Jesus. after he has seen all that he has been revealed to. Yes, Lord, come, come. Let me hear that shout. Let me hear that trumpet and take me off this island of Patmos and join you in heaven. But because, again, he may call at any moment, and he has reminded us over and over again in other places to be watchful, to be ready, to occupy till I come, conduct my business, because our living for him is his business. Conduct it as he would have us to do. And so we kind of come full circle that God is looking for faithfulness, and we come back to 1 Corinthians 4:2, which we had touched on at the back at the beginning, where Paul stated to the Corinthians, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful." Faithfulness. Not a very profound word. It's just be faithful. And I think we all understand what that word is. Again, I'm talking to the cream of the crop because we've got our folks here on Wednesday night. But faithfulness, just doing what God wants us to do, day in and day out. I was always bemused a little bit, but I thought, well, this is what I do. Back when I was church planting in Washington, I guess our rental payment was taking care of a Bible study for the residents and a prayer breakfast for the residents that they had had going before I ever came in and said, hey, can we use your facilities? I'm seeing about starting a church here in Lake Stevens. Can we use this facility? Sure you can. Didn't have to pay for it. Not a penny went out of our pockets to use that facility for the years that we did. But I figured the payment was, when I was talking to her, they had just lost the pastor that was doing those things. He decided to quit his church and head up to Alaska and missionary aviation and caught everybody by surprise. And so she grilled me about some things, and we were both believers, and she felt secure in having this Baptist pastor come in and do these things. But, you know, more often than not, I would hear, well, you are faithful. And I thought, well, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. You've asked me to do this Bible study. You've asked me to do this prayer breakfast. I'm going to be here on those Tuesdays and Thursdays for those because you've asked me to. Yeah, I guess you could say I'm being faithful, but they, you know, bringing it up as if that was something special. And I thought, well, that's nothing special. That's what we're supposed to do. And so God reminds us that it's required in stewards that a man be found faithful. I mean, how well would your work, for those of you that have retired, how well would you have been working in your job if you had, instead of putting in a 40-hour work week, you said, you know what, I'm only going to do 20. That's it. That's all I want to do. Would you have lasted long at the refinery doing that, Mike? Yeah. Why? Because they required of their employees to be faithful. And while we may grumble and complain about some of those things, we did it. Because we knew it was our livelihood. I mean, it's kind of hard to find another job, possibly at times. But we did what we were supposed to do. Did we consider it exceptional if we did our 40-hour work week that was expected of us? No. We're doing our job, if you will. That's normal. It's when we do something above that that we hope at times we get recognition. But, you know, that was normal. And yet God reminds us our Christian living, our normal Christian living, seeking to live for him, is what he expects of us. And our stewardship of it is for his glory, our good. And it becomes truly a joy on our part when we follow his plan and we see it lived out in our lives. Doesn't mean that we're not going to have struggles. Doesn't mean that we're not going to have hardships and trials and testings. We're going to have those. But as we focus on him, walk in the light of his word, walk in his leading, hey, he gives us the strength to go through those things. He gives us the courage. He gives us everything that we need to go through that and find that he's faithful to us far more than we are to him sometimes. And it truly becomes a greater joy than to live for him, because he's living for us. He has lived for us. So I trust that we have been at least reminded, if not encouraged, instructed in some new things about our stewardship as we live for him as believers in the life that he has given to us, and to keep on keeping on. Until he takes us home, he's not done with us. And so there's still things we have to do. So we'll pick up and start in on a new series, or at least something new next week. Whether it would be at the start of a new series, we'll see. But we'll start into that next week.